was a voice, that was a tone that implies some bitterness there. That's what that was. That was the voice of rueful experience. Okay. Ladies and gentlemen, it's 1 minute and 54 seconds after the hour of 11, and this is the month of September, the year of our Lord, 2006. Thank you for... It's just sort of the slow shake of the head that gets me just sort of the, well, I've been hurt before. What the hell was I talking about? Well, we're here. Hi. Live from the plushly appointed yet not overly ostentatious studios of AM 970 Solid State Radio. This, my friends, is Rick Emerson Radio Program. We're live in beautiful downtown Portland, Oregon. Where the corn is as high as something. Okay. It's 503-733-2970. 503-733-2970. You can also email if you like. It's rick@rickemerson.com. Rick@RickEmerson.com. No, but that's only part of the first. That's only the first half of the guest booking pictures I got this morning. Well, we'll talk more about that. All right. Yes, 503-733-2970. You can also email if you'd like to engage with us electronically in some fashion with your comments, your clarifications, your conventions, your hate mail, your what have you. It is Rick@RickEmerson.com. Rick@RickEmerson.com. .com and so forth. All right. Well, before we do anything else, I don't want to get behind with even the guarantees thing. So I'll tell you what. Let's go ahead and welcome to the Rick Emerson Show our good friend.
Postman is the person in your neighborhood.
Mailman Chris, official stenographer of the Rick Emerson radio program. How are you, sir?
I'm well. I'm here. It's coupon day, so.
Isn't it, what are they called? Like Advos?
Advo.
Yep.
What does Advo stand for?
It's the name of the company.
Is it? Because this is Tim's favorite day. Or is it tomorrow? What is your favorite day? Because you come in here.
I wasn't aware that I had a favorite day. No, this is the first I've heard of it.
There's one that, you know, it is now officially your favorite day. As it is of all right-thinking citizens. Isn't there one day a week you just come in here laden down with coupons?
Oh, that's Wednesday.
Okay, that's what I'm saying. So they all go out today. All right.
Yeah,
and so that's got to be hell on, like, your whatever, your back. Like, if you're going to get a hernia today, it's going to be the day for that, for most likely.
Yeah, one for every single house.
Okay. You know, here's the thing. There's only two kinds of people in this world. I mean, as far as coupons go that you get in the mail, there are people who put them all in a pile and go through every one of them, and then there are people who just automatically throw them all away. I fall into that latter category. I don't think in my life I've ever used a coupon that has just arrived in an unsolicited fashion in the mail. All of that, anything that comes in the mail, here's what I do. It, like most people, and I think everybody's got this. Now, Sarah and I have talked before about our regrettable inability to pay any of our bills on time and how everything just sort of stacks by the microwave. Now, that doesn't mean that I don't pay attention to those bills when they arrive. I pay attention long enough to put them in a pile with all the other bills that are never going to be paid. And they're just going to sit there. Have you heard that commercial? And I'm pretty sure that it actually... I'm sure that it plays on this station, where it's that ad where they simulate the bill collecting, and it, Mr. Jenkins, this is your final call. Next, we will be kidnapping your children, or whatever. And it's, you know, if this sounds familiar to you, and it sounds familiar to most of us in this room, probably. That and the sound of our car being hauled down the block at 2 a.m. while we sleep soundly. Anyway, what was I saying? But I do prioritize my mail. I triage the mail when I get it. And anything that has, here's how you know what to throw away. Anything that has a lot of red and black or a lot of earth tones immediately goes in the trash, because you know that all of that is just some crap from Trader Joe's. Trying to sell me some pasta that's like $14 a pound that I'm never going to buy. So that goes in there. And of course, what is the mail you immediately look at? You look at anything that is sort of a package, you know, that's sort of an overly large shape, because who knows, you know, perhaps you've received something exciting in the mail, even by accident. Perhaps the person who lived in your place before you ordered pornography and it's arrived for you and you can keep it. Or envelopes that have a sort of the glassine, you know, the window. Any envelope that has a plastic window through which you can see something inside, because that's either someone giving you money or somebody demanding money or threatening to turn something off in your house. All those then go in the pile. Everything else, into the trash.
Well, anyway. There's another category of people, and that's the people that just leave it in their mailbox.
Oh, man, I do that, too.
I used to be that girl. I'm so sorry. My mail person hated me.
Oh, and see, because you guys, now let me ask you this. Is there a given number of days, like a set number of days, after which you will just stop delivering mail to someone who hasn't emptied out their box, or is it a question of fullness?
It's a matter of fullness. If the box is full, I'll put a note in there saying clean it out, or it's all gone.
And so what happens at that point? Does the mail get returned? Like, let me, because I've done this a couple times. There was actually a Seinfeld about this, I think, where Kramer decided he just didn't need, because he was using a lot of email and so forth, and he was like, Jerry, it's a thing of the past. It's like the Pony Express. And he decided he didn't need his mailbox anymore, and so he tried to get it closed and turned off. And I sort of did that once when I was living in Salt Lake, where for just literally for like 6 weeks, I just didn't answer. I just didn't get the mail. Because there was nothing. No one who I really wanted to hear from had my address. So I knew it was either bills or junk mail. So I just stopped. I stopped checking it. And after a while, the mail just quit coming. And
they just figure you've moved.
Yeah, and so they just figure I'm dead or something. So what happens to the mail at that point? Does it get returned to sender, or does it go to like some overflowing box at the post office?
Well, it's my route. I'll bring it back. I'll sit it in a for 10 days, and it'll sit there for 10 days, wait for this person to come in.
Right.
And if after 10 days he doesn't come in, all the what you referred to as junk mail,
yeah,
all that gets thrown away. All the first class mail gets sent back to the sender.
Are you guys prohibited from using the phrase junk mail?
It's standard mail.
Standard mail. Uh-huh. All right. Whatever you say.
Used to call it bulk rate. Now it's standard.
Because bulk rate makes people think of spam, right? Because of the bulk folder that your computer has. All right.
Exactly.
Scotty wants to know if you load your own mail truck.
Yes.
Okay, no wonder you guys all live to be 150 years old. Because you're it's like having a 24-hour fitness thing, like 6 days a week. All right, here's what we are going to get to today. Today we got the Lisa Goddard is going to be joining us from CNN Radio on the Hill. We got Jim Roop. I believe our good friend Dennis Pitzenberger is going to be stopping by today from the Portland Tribune. And I am not going to guarantee this, but the word is, because the Dick Dale thing kind of fell through yesterday, the word is that we'll do a brief chat with Dick Dale probably sometime this hour, maybe later on in the 11 o'clock hour, maybe 11:45 or so. That, though, I'm not... Don't put any weight on that. That's just speculation at this point. We have some watchers. Tim, what watchers have we today?
Penis. Whitney. Penis Whitney.
Whitney or Brittany?
Whitney.
Whitney, fantastic. So there you go. Penis Whitney. Sort of like a duck goose. But here. We may also, we will talk about Britney Spears a little bit. I don't know if it'll be a full watch, but we will talk about Britney Spears a little bit. And also, I got a big pile of mail. Mail about this, because you hear that commercial we play, the superhero superherostuff.com, which is, it's a commercial that apparently unnerves a lot of people. And we've actually talked about it a lot during the show. Like, we'll go to a break, and there's two of them that rotate, right? There's two superhero stuff spots that rotate. There's one that is like, it's like some guy fighting another guy, right? And he's got a magical ashtray or something. Does anybody know what I'm talking about?
Yeah.
There's one, it's like, hello, Cape, I see you also have the magical power of whatever. And it's like it's like a superhero and a villain fighting. And then there's another one, which sounds a lot like Silence of the Lambs to me.
Sounds like Jolie.
And that's the one that sort of unnerves people. And so I got a big stack of mail here about the superhero stuff spot. So we're going to, later on, we'll talk about that. We're going to play that and see if we can figure out, because it apparently terrifies a large section of the audience. So we'll get to that as well. There you go. Have you got all of that, sir?
I do. I have Lisa Goddard, Jim Roop, Dennis Bonaducci, the Penis Watch, Whitney, Brittany, and superhero stuff.
That's what I'm talking about, my friend. And we will check in with you at the end of today's program and see what's gotten through and what's not.
Will do.
Thank you, sir. There you go. There's Mailman Chris. Let's get the... What was this, George? Hello, Jeff. You're on the Rick Emerson Show. How can I help you today?
That bastard, George Lucas, got $50.97 from me down at Best Buy at 10:01 this morning.
I love the idea that somehow he was there with a knife and you didn't have any choice. He was there with a gun, he was holding your family hostage, he had a cute kitten and said he'd drown it unless you bought the thing. You bought the original...
That's exactly what happened.
You bought the original trilogy on DVD, didn't you?
I did, and I used my real power and did not buy the goofy aluminum tin, whatever, of movies. I just went ahead and bought the singulars and the standard.
That's no excuse.
Shelf, so they fit right on my shelf.
That is no excuse. Do you realize at this point George Lucas could just be selling you dirt from the garden in his backyard and you would be buying it?
I think they're actually, next year, they're going to be coming out with actual sand from Tunisia that was used on the set.
And you would buy it. Admit to me now that you would buy it.
Why would you not buy it?
That's what I'm saying.
They put $19.99 on it on sale.
Exactly. If they put like a limited time only, like that's the miracle of that. You know what that is? That's Disney marketing at work right there. Disney discovered a couple years ago, I won't get sidetracked by this, but Disney discovered a couple years ago that if they just claimed that something was for 1 year only, that people would buy it. What is this? Well, it's the rescuers down under. But we're only going to sell it for a year. And then people, I got to have it. You know, and then suddenly a movie that you couldn't possibly care less about becomes in the
classic forever.
Exactly. But you can't just say it that way. In the patois of Disney, it becomes, and now a treasured family classic can be yours on DVD for just 1 year. And then it goes back to the vaults forever. And so suddenly you're lining up to buy, 102 Dalmatians or some crap that you could not possibly be less
than. Heaven 3.
Exactly. The Journey of Natty Gann. All right. Well, feel shame, sir.
All right. Thank you very much.
All right. Thank you. We ought to have some bit, bless you. We ought to have some bit on this show that's like a confessional where people just call up and then Tim Riley as the priest. It just sort of absolves people for their sins. So, like, when a guy calls up and confesses to buying the original trilogy, which is pointless, because it's exactly the same crap that they've been selling at fanfares for, like, the last 20 years. It's exactly the same as the Japanese version. Never mind. Ladies and gentlemen, we're joined today, as always, by the lovely and hay-fever-ridden Sarah Dillon.
It is always when I walk into this room. Every day.
I was talking to John Paul about it, the program director for a couple, and I asked him about it, and he said that that the morning crew, a couple, has complained about the same thing. That they're fine, walk in the room, suddenly it's all kinds of bad and icky and terrible and
ugh.
Yeah.
Yeah, I just became instantly congested.
Other than that, how you doing?
I'm all right. How are you?
I'm fine. Okay.
Good.
Is Tim Riley working on the following stories for you today?
A mysterious light streaks across the Washington state skies. Animal rights groups suggest a more politically correct term, canine Americans, or dogs. An alligator is captured and duct taped in Grant's Pass, just as Steve Irwin would do. And seeking vengeance, Steve Irwin fans begin killing stingrays for vengeance.
That's how the conservationist would have wanted it, I'm sure.
Yes.
All right, there you go. It's 503-733-2970. That plus we'll talk about the superhero stuff spot. We'll have Lisa Goddard at the bottom of the hour. And also, I should mention, here's the thing that Tim was... I won't say he was cursing Robert Wagner, but I was just as we came into this studio, I was noting, and this is 6 pages long, by the way. They sent me, I get these things, and you used to get them over the fax, and now you get them in the email, and sometimes I still get them. And this was both. They emailed this to me, but just to make sure that I got it, just to make sure that at no point that was I unaware of the possibility of interviewing Robert Wagner and Stephanie Powers, they also faxed it to me. It is a 6-page guest pitch. And first of all, I don't understand anybody who faxes anything to a radio station anymore. Getting a fax is like getting an email from 1986. It's just, especially if we got this fax machine back here, which still uses the weird crinkly, that curly thermal paper. And you know that there's some poor sod on the other end who's faxing PSAs off to radio stations under the mistaken belief that they're being read by somebody. Whoever it is that faxes to this fax machine over here by the couple jocks area, your faxes are being read by no one. Being read by no one. And here's what happens. Is it like once a day, or once a week, there's some part-timer who comes by and just gathers them all up and tosses them into the trash. That's it. It's sort of a cycle of life kind of a thing. Trees get cut down, they get turned into paper, they get faxed on your end, they get spit out here, they get gathered up, and they get put in, not even in the recycle bin, they get put in the trash can. That's where they go to. Anyway, but I got this email here. Interview opportunity, Robert Wagner and Stephanie Powers. Sarah, do you know who either of these people are?
Robert Wagner wasn't he number two in Austin Powers?
He was, actually. No, okay. him and his hair. That's not, but see, that's, this is the thing. It is the guest booking bait and switch where they
put Susan Powers.
Stephanie Powers. I don't know who Susan Powers is. Isn't she the? No, that's Susan Powder.
Yeah.
Whatever happened to Susan Powder? Is she alive or dead?
She's bankrupt and bald.
Just like Jackie Coogan. Zing. Robert R.J. Wagner and Stephanie Powers, they're doing the thing where they put the big name at the top that you care about, but then immediately tell you underneath that it's you can't talk to them about anything that you really are interested in. It's sort of like the Don't Call Me Sulu thing.
So what can we talk to them about?
Who was it that guy? Who is that guy that I interviewed where they told me preemptively I couldn't ask him about anything that was remotely related? It wasn't J.J. Walker. It was somebody. It was like somebody from... It was like some second string guy from Star Wars. It was like the guy who played Uncle Owen or somebody. And they're like, please don't ask him about Star Wars. Talk to him about the healing power of ginger. Anyway, Robert Wagner and Stephanie Powers promoting the long running hit series Heart to Heart.
Okay, I remember that now.
And it wasn't Heart to Heart. Hi, my name's Max. I drive around these wrinkled swingers. They solve crimes. The complete second season, now out on DVD. For an interview with both Robert and Stephanie together, please email me ASAP. Due to the high interest level, it's best if you reply only if you are in markets 1 through 50. So, good morning, Santa Fe. Good morning, Tulsa. Need not apply. America's most glamorous and adventurous pair of amateur sleuths are back in fine form. When Robert Wagner and Stephanie Powers, who looks really like a fourth string 80s porn star in this picture. They're back. The 5-disc box set features all 20 episodes from the series. Blah, 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 blah. Do you know who created Heart to Heart? Tim Riley?
Yes.
It's not Aaron Spelling. Created by Sidney Sheldon.
Of I Dream of Jeannie fame.
What's that?
Of I Dream of Jeannie fame.
Now, did Sidney Sheldon create I Dream of Jeannie?
Yes.
Sidney Sheldon, author of Master of the Game and so forth. Mm-hmm. And then executive produced by Aaron Spelling and Leonard Goldberg. And then they take five more pages. Now, here's the best thing about this, is I got this, and then literally 2 minutes after I pulled this off the email, my phone rang, and it was somebody asking me if we'd like to talk to, wait for it, C. Thomas Howell. Because C. Thomas Howell, who we were just talking about a few weeks ago. C. Thomas Howell, because he's launching what? That's right. Nationally syndicated radio program, kid. So in case they're going to need something for Wake Up with Whoopi, when that vanquishes itself in a short while, apparently C. Thomas Howell will be. And I think they told me it was going to be on KLSX. I'm not entirely clear about that. Or maybe I just think of KLSX in Los Angeles as the place where all those guys go. You know? So first it's Cato Kaelin, then it was Dana Plato, now it's gonna be C. Thomas Howell.
The Soul Man.
Yes. And also in, how what the hell else was he in? He was in The Hitcher?
Soul Man. Oh, I know
Soul
what you're talking
Man.
About.
Soul Man and The Hitcher, and then wasn't he in one of the Outsiders or one of those S.E. Hinton
movies? He was Pony Boy, wasn't he?
I don't know. I've never seen The Outsiders because even though it's about gangs, it seems like a chick film, and so it's a thing that I never saw. And it was written by a woman, and I never saw it. It's just a thing that I never. Soul Man, which is simultaneously the best and worst movie ever made. Best, okay.
Isn't that when that movie where he wears blackface?
Where he wears blackface. Because really, that's the key to sophisticated humor and wit, is to have a white man dress up as though he is black. The best line from the movie Soul Man, it's when he sleeps with the white co-ed, and she says to him, I can feel 600 years of cultural oppression in every pelvic thrust.
Oh, my God.
That would be good if he was doing, like, a morning show on jamming.
It really is. It's the apotheosis of great filmmaking. All right, we'll get some of these calls. Let us do this, ladies and gentlemen. Go to the Ministry of Truth, where Tim Riley awaits you.
And now, from the Ministry of Truth, this is Tim Riley.
Because you care, Eva Longoria says she's done with television after Desperate Housewives ends. The actor, who's 31, says she loves the routine it provides, but Desperate Housewives will be her last series. Don't try to talk her out of it.
How will I go on?
I won't do another series after Desperate Housewives. No, no, no. Please don't ask me again. She plays the very saucy Gabrielle Solis on the show. And she can be seen next on the big screen in How I Met My Boyfriend's Dead Fiancé, due in 2007.
Saucy.
Once again, Eva Longoria is done with television.
Is she only 31?
Yes.
She looks a little bakey and wrinkly for only being 31. So did Paula Abdul.
She's from Texas.
Well, just some sort of... What did she do before she was on Desperate Housewives? Does anybody know?
I think she was like a cheerleader or something.
She just came out of nowhere. I'll recap a little bit more because I didn't get to all my notes yesterday. I'll recap a little bit of the Rockstar Supernova taping that I was at on Sunday. Here's the thing. People ask me what Brooke Burke looks like. Brooke Burke and Paula Abdul look stunningly alike in person. They're both really short, really bony. And then Paula Abdul, I don't know if she injured herself at some point, but she limps a lot. She sort of was hobbling around because at one point she went over and tried to hug Dave Navarro and she almost, and I was so hoping she would fall. We were all rooting for her to fall and then she didn't. She regained her equilibrium at the last moment. Here's Tim Riley.
There's a ban on skinny models that is shocking the fashion world. Dateline Madrid, Spain. The world's first ban on overly thin models at a top-level fashion show in Madrid has caused outrage among modeling agencies and raised the prospect of restrictions and other catwalk pageants. Madrid's Fashion Week has turned away underweight models after protests that young girls and women are trying to copy their real thin looks and develop eating disorders at the same time. Organizers say they want to project an image of beauty and health rather than a waif-like or heroin-chic look. But Kathy Gold of New York's elite modeling agency said the fashion industry was being used as a scapegoat for illnesses like anorexia and bulimia. I think it's outrageous. I understand they want to set this tone of a healthy, beautiful woman. But what about discrimination against the model and what about freedom of the designers, says Gold, elite North America's director, adding that the move could harm careers of naturally gazelle-like models.
Gazelle-like, meaning with a thick, lustrous coat. And on the next page, by the way, they illustrate this article with...
Oh.
Yeah. That's exactly the reaction I'm talking about. Look at this model on the next page. That's what I'm saying. And I know you all at home can't see what we all just went, but here's the thing.
It's like when we liberated the concentration camps after World War II, for goodness sake.
Totally. That's a whole lot of, like, they took my shoes. That's totally what that is. I mean, and you don't need us to post the visual aid of what the model looks like. You know what she looks like. She's a model.
She's like a praying mantis.
She's hideous. Yes, she is. As the woman says in Bridget Jones' Diary, she is an American stick creature. And completely and terribly, hideously unattractive. Because here's the thing. And I'll be very clear on this point. Because I have been accused in the past of being a sizist. Of saying terrible things about very thin women. Here's the thing. You can tell, and I mean this sincerely, and I believe that this is true. Because I would go on and on about how guys don't find women who are this thin attractive. And I don't care what some nutcase frat brother of yours said. Guys don't find women who look like a bag of antlers to be hot. They just don't. Now, guys will have sex with those women, but guys that have sex with a toaster, really. I mean, if it just came down to it. Judging whether or not a woman's attracted by whether a guy will have sex with her is completely pointless.
She could fit a toaster. About the size of a pop cup.
I mean, she looks like she's put together with twine and pipe cleaners. So judging whether a woman has a good body type by whether a guy sleeps with her is completely useless. But I have been accused by some very thin women of being discriminatory and just saying that them. It's not that. I believe you can tell when a woman is naturally slender as a body type and when a woman just doesn't eat because she thinks it makes her hot. The latter is, you know, the former is perfectly fine. Latter, hideous. Hideous, hideous, hideous. And it just has the effect of, as I often say, can neither achieve nor sustain. Should we break here? We've got to... Now, we were talking about Dan DeRose, who was formerly of Coin. And it's funny, because I was saying that we wanted to get him back at some point. I didn't have his phone number or his email.
I don't have his phone number or email.
But look what it is. It's like a Beetlejuice thing. We think he appears.
Wow.
There he is.
I thought he'd be golfing.
No, well, we'll talk to this. Dan, Sean, more from Tim Riley later on. We'll talk to legendary surf guitarist Dick Dale for a few minutes later on in this hour. Lisa Goddard, etc. Don't go anywhere. Sir Rick Emerson Show. You stay there. So, like a, that's so cool.
So I sent him right over to Aaron.
It's like an aged relative.
Exactly.
Yeah. Where's my teeth? Hey, it's the Rick Emerson Show. We're live from Portland. It is Tuesday. It's 503-733-2970. What? I don't even know this. What is this note I made to myself? Thugs. Why did I write down the word thugs? It doesn't make any sense. Thugs. It's, here's what I wrote.
Are you writing
down
about your neighborhood?
No. Here's what I. Oh, yeah, get me started. I wrote down to myself this morning, just as we were beginning in the program, I wrote heart to heart, C. Thomas Howell, thugs, shower. It doesn't make any sense. I have no idea. All right. It's 503-733-2970. We'll get to Sean and Dan here, just a skosh, as our Asian friends say. Ladies and gentlemen, let's now welcome to the Rick Emerson Show, live from the Hill, CNN radio correspondent Lisa Goddard. How are you, Lisa?
Hello, I'm good.
How's, okay, I do, here's
hello,
the thing.
Hello.
Here's the thing about when you say that, there really is, there's this sequence, I don't know if you're familiar with the...
No, that reminds me of the voice from Seinfeld.
Well, and you must be familiar with the Don and Mike show because you're in D.C.
That is funny that you bring up Don and Mike. Yes, of course I am. I grew up here, so I've listened to Don and Mike for a long, long time.
We are big fans of Don and Mike and the show. They're actually on our station. We carry them in the evening here. And they do this, there's this opening collage, this opening montage of sound that they do at the beginning of the program. And it changes from time to time, and they sort of update it and they tweak it, but it's just this sort of pastiche of sound effects and drop-ins from movies and whatever. And there is actually a whole series of hellos that they play.
Yes.
And one of them, one is Rob Spiewak's daughter, and one is Robin Williams from Mrs. Doubtfire, sort of a hello, and it's just, you don't really sound like that. But there's something in your tone, like an inflection that really does conjure up.
No, it's totally a cross between that and Jerry Seinfeld's voice that he dumps his girlfriend over.
That's...
Oh, no.
I don't remember that.
Oh, yeah, because he loves the voice. He likes to always say, hello. And his girlfriend made him choose between the voice and her, and he picked the voice.
All right. Well, okay. So don't take it as a...
This may be where that's coming from. Because, yeah, I'm a Don and Mike fan as well, for sure.
Fantastic. It's often a tough sell here on the West Coast because you'll have to be... There is no middle ground on Don and Mike here in Portland.
Yeah, that's really true. It is a love or hate, that's for sure.
And it does have I like the show, and I'm from here, but it does have a very East Coast feel to it. So it can be a little off-putting.
Yeah.
No, it's true.
I see that.
All right, here's the thing. I'm just going to tell you right at the top here. I didn't watch George Bush's speech last night. And I think largely because my blood pressure is just sort of a touch-and-go situation sometimes as it is, and also largely because George Bush speeches, and I don't mean any disrespect to the office of the presidency, but they often seem like some sort of political Mad Libs game, where you can just sort of war on terror, fight for freedom, future for our children. And so I guess my question is that he was... This is sort of like when I was walking through the airport yesterday when I was coming back from Los Angeles and they noted that the terror level was orange and my wife and I sort of looked at it for a second and then we just sort of looked at each other and shrugged and it was just sort of a what can you do and just went home because there was really nothing I could do with that information. This reminds me of what I saw George Bush saying last night. I saw some highlights of it this morning where he said that we have a difficult road ahead.
Right.
And we've all got to buckle down and be prepared for a struggle, etc. And I mean, I know it seems like a broad, overarching question, but I mean, does that mean anything? I mean, is there anything in particular they're trying to get us to gear up for, or is it just sort of to remind us that he's still in charge because the midterms are coming up?
Yeah, not to be cynical, I think they're gearing us up for these elections because I think they know that if the Democrats take over the House or maybe the Senate, that it's going to make everything so much harder for them. It is going to change what they can do in Iraq to some degree. It's going to change a lot for their administration. So they know that their policy and everything is on the line in this election. And I, as much as they said this wasn't a political speech, I think clearly they were hoping for some big political benefits from it. But the crazy thing here now is in Washington, now I'm convinced everyone has just gone crazy. Everyone just needs to go home, take a break, maybe get another job for a year, and then come back because today, everyone is just going bananas over the speech. This big issue, was it political? Was it not political? You're being political by questioning whether it's political. Geez, you know, let's talk about the issues here. I guess I'm stepping outside of my objective reporter.
This is the place to do
here,
that.
But these guys are driving me crazy right now.
Well, no. This is the place to shed any sheen of objectivity that one might have. That this show is entirely
ahead is what I hear.
No, it's an entirely appropriate venue. Well, because I guess my thing is this, and perhaps I travel in a less sophisticated circle than some, but I don't know anybody who watched it. And here's, and I don't say that just to mouth. I guess my point is this, we've entered this sort of, I don't know whether it's because he is sort of a sense of a lame duck president or something like that, but I guess, which technically he's not at this point, but when I hear things like George W. Bush giving a speech and then everyone sort of talking about it and analyzing it, I get the feeling that I get when I sometimes talk to these friends of mine who've been sucked into Amway somehow, where it's just a bunch of people selling things to each other into this sort of weird cyclical, just sort of a daisy chain.
That's interesting.
And because I don't know anybody in the so-called real world who watched this. The only people I know who are talking about it are people who are who are politicos in some way, that they have some vested interest in this. And I just get the feeling that Americans are just so burned out on being told that they're not safe yet. You figure that that's not going to do him any favors. Wouldn't it be better politically for him to come on and say, you know, to quit scaring people and just to say, hey, things are better, things are looking up, we're actually safer than we were a couple years ago because of me, George W. Bush. Wouldn't that be the smarter thing to do politically?
Yeah, you know, I think he had said that in the last week a couple of times, and I was surprised that his speech last night didn't have more of that in it, that it was sort of more militaristic, kind of more John Wayne, a little bit more, we're going after them, we're doing it. But obviously this president really feels like he has to portray that, either to keep the country in the right stance or to keep his fellow Republicans in their job. It's hard to say. But, yeah, I was surprised that there wasn't more of that. But I think he's in a position right now where he's damned if he does, damned if he doesn't. I think that Democrats were going to, I think, as Tony Snow said earlier, you know, I don't like to steal from the press secretaries often, but I think he was right. There was a legion of Democratic flacks out there that just had their hand on the send button, ready to for the president to finish his speech, and they had one or two versions of press releases they'd send out, and they just picked one and hit send, and
right.
That's the way it was going. It was really, it really has gotten just alarming, the way things work here right now.
Well, it can't be doing him any favors that his own Senate came out with a report saying that Al-Qaeda and Iraq had nothing to do with each other.
Yeah, that's right, and that's been fascinating to see how they've tried to spin that. Vice President Cheney going on the weekend talk shows and saying, well, even so, we would still go after Saddam Hussein. We still think he was a threat, you know, and that's fine. But I think he was really trying to dodge this. How did you guys get it wrong in the first place? And trying to point to the CIA is what he was doing. And each of them have a different particular spin on that issue. But it really has been damaging to them. And Democrats smell the blood in the water on that. They know that was a blunder, and they know that this president, who started out as being incredibly trusted by the American people, whether they liked him or not initially, people generally trusted him that he was saying what he meant. But he's lost that now, and I think, and Democrats know that.
I got to say, it's got to be a good time right now to be a Paul Begala type.
And those guys are having a great time.
Because you can because they can sense the momentum. If you are, even it has nothing to do with being a Democrat, if you are not a Republican, you got to feel like the momentum is with you right now and just gathering speed.
That's right. But, you know, that might be the group I need to get more in tune with, because it really is to them a game that they love, and they've convinced themselves that, and maybe they're right, that this is serving the country. But you see stories out there about there's a college Republican intern in Michigan right now who is trying to drum up college vote by doing things like find the illegal immigrant day. You know, and has a college student dressing up like an illegal immigrant hiding on campus. And whoever finds this person wins a prize.
You know, we really are just living in one big Patty Chayefsky fever dream. I mean, it really is true. I have no, as Meg Ryan once said in a film, I have no response to that. All right, Lisa Goddard, CNN radio correspondent. We will be talking to you very soon as this madness continues to unfold.
Exactly.
Thank you, Lisa.
Thank you. Take care.
All right, there you go. CNN radio correspondent Lisa Goddard, ladies and gentlemen. All right. Let's get a couple of calls here, and then I think we have, we're going to talk to Dick Dale here in just a short while. Then we got Tim Riley coming up at the top of the hour with the AM 970 New News Hour. Later on, I'll recap the Rockstar Supernova taping, et cetera. Dan, Dan DeRose?
How are you, sir?
Hello, sir. Now,
hello, Dan.
Here's the thing. How did you know to call?
I felt this urge.
Did you feel a great, I'm going to get it wrong now. A great disturbance in the force as though millions of voices cried out and were suddenly silenced?
You know, that's actually why I'm calling. I, too, need to make a confession that Mr. Riley, I stood in line this morning.
Oh,
and
no!
No, I purchased the complete fifth season of The Fact of Life.
Oh, well, all right.
So I went the other route with the 80s sitcom.
Now, is the fifth season the one where Cloris Leachman was there?
Is that the,
Because there's that thing where Cloris Leachman came in and they started the candy shop or whatever and her son worked there with him. And then it changed from that, the one lyric in the Facts of Life theme song changed to "The Boys You Used to Hate You Date."
You know what? I actually just watch it for Tootie.
Okay.
Tootie's my favorite.
Man, did she turn out just to be the hottest of all those girls or what? And because everybody thought it was going to be, as Sarah's giving me that you're turning into a dirty old man look, but let's we got to speak together as men here. I mean, everybody had their money on Lisa Welchel, who instead just turned
Blair?
Up to be. Yeah.
Yeah, she turned out to be a crazy
Christian.
God.
Yeah, no,
girl.
That's exactly what I was going to say. She turned out to be a nutty and proactive using Christian.
I'm a little more freaked out that you know all the names of these people.
Oh, dude, I'm all over the fact.
Dan, have you ever listened to this show?
I'm a tool. Who are we
kidding? It's all in a catalog in his head.
But man, I got to tell you, Kim Fields, who plays Tootie. And by the way, bonus points if anybody right now can tell me Tootie's real name. Go.
Didn't you just say Kim Fields?
Well, no, but I mean on the show, because her real name, her given name on the show is not Tootie. It
wow.
is, in fact...
Tootiel.
She's French. Ah, Mademoiselle Tootiel. Would you care for an escargot? Okay, that's funny, right? It's just stupid. That actually trumps me knowing her real name, Tootiel, with two L's at the end. L-L-E, Tootia. No, her name is Dorothy. See that?
Why did she go by Tootie?
That I actually don't know. I'm too busy trying to remember in my head when she quit. You don't even know. Did you even watch The Facts of Life,
yes.
in reruns? Really?
Uh-huh.
Is that a thing that, like, sorority chicks watch? Is it like a chick bonding show?
No, it was when I was young. I watched
All right.
it.
I'm too busy trying to remember when she switched from roller skates to walking. Because you remember, like, the first 3 years of the show, her gimmick was that she skated everywhere.
Yes.
Including that episode where there was a flood and she had to lead the horse out of the barn. Hi, I'm a loser.
Wow.
Anyway, my point is that Kim Fields is hot. I mean, just ended up...
You didn't
up,
think Joe was hot?
I thought they were all hot, you know, all
except
in their,
for who was the...
In their own way, Mindy Cohn,
yeah.
who played Natalie.
Natalie.
What is that? You just made...
I was just like the bigger girl.
Sarah
like
just put her arms out as though they were parentheses around her and then jiggled up and down. That was how you depicted the larger girl.
I was trying to say
girl.
It on the air.
Fat girl. She ended up being hot, though. She ended up
Did
being
she?
Cute. Not hot, but cute. If you remember later on, like in the Cloris Leachman era, that episode where she had sex with her boyfriend, Snake. With her boyfriend, Snake. That was not a possessive right there. Her boyfriend, Snake. She ended up being kind of cute. Not as hot as Kim Fields. Kim Fields is stacked like a Jenga game. I mean, it's unreal, the proportions on that woman. Where is she now? She did Living Single, right?
Mm-hmm.
Because Living Single had to exist long enough for white people to steal it and call it Friends. So, and then it just went away. I don't know what she's doing now. Somebody find out what Kim Fields is doing. See if she's busted down enough that I can stalk her. All right.
Hey, what's up, Dan?
What are you calling about?
My little piece of gossip today, and I hate keep going back to coin, but little birdie has told me the Ignite system, the whole robotic system that was supposedly and has forced out, you know, a good deal of workforce at coin, is being abandoned.
Is this because it screwed their news the other day?
Yeah, if you remember me saying their whole noon was just not on the air, and they ran a little crawl saying it was technical difficulties. What that was is this whole system that's supposed to run the tape, the cameras, the audio, crashed minutes before the noon, and they had no backup.
Well, you know.
So all those people they fired, oh, my God.
Must have been sitting at home rubbing their hands together in childlike glee, I might add.
Well, I don't know about that. And some of the people that were let go, you know, weren't directly, you know, affected by the Ignite system. But, you know, that there was supposed to be a second wave of layoffs.
When you were on Friday, you had talked about how their news had just bit the dust. It just wasn't on that day, and they had nothing prepared. And now we find out that it was the automation system. That's hard to believe.
Yep.
So, all right. Hey, brother, while I got you on the phone, do me a favor. I'm going to put you on hold. Dan DeRose here, formerly of Coin, who was on Friday. You did a great job on Friday, by the way. The people liked you. I'm going to put you on hold. Will you give Scotty, Jay, your email and or phone number so we can kind of get a hold of you? We want to kind of have you kind of do, because you are so in touch with the media scene here. We would kind of have you be our sort of our media.
I need you to drink all of our beer.
Our media head of hopper.
Oh, I can drink the beer.
All right, I'm going to put you on hold. Leave your stuff with, leave your info with Scotty. We'll talk to you soon.
Good to talk to you guys. You take care.
Thank you, Dan. There you go. All right. In just like 10 seconds here, we'll get Dick Dale. Let me talk to Sean. Sean, you're on the Rick Emerson Show. Hello, sir.
Thanks, Rick. I was just wanting to answer your question about Eva Longoria.
Ah, and so what did she do before she was on Desperate Housewives?
She was discovered on, she did, I don't know, about a year on The Young and the Restless.
Really?
She played character called Isabella Bronyan. She was like this evil chick.
So she was a soap actress.
Yeah,
all right,
she was great. You're talking about the black-haired girl from Desperate Housewives, right?
Yeah, Eva Longoria. Yeah, okay, so that's why, because you got to wonder, I mean, and again, I don't mean to sound ageist, but in Hollywood, 31 is, you know, that's kind of up there a little bit to be discovered, and so I figured she had to have done something, because you don't break into a prime time.
But you know what, Rick,
you know.
I got to disagree with you, because as I get older, I'm 41 years old, but as I get older, chicks like her look way hotter to me than,
I'm not disputing that. Everybody knows that I am a fan of 30 and 40, even 40-something women. Everybody knows that.
Exactly.
But again, you know what it is? It's the difference between, because Hollywood doesn't function on the rules of what guys really like.
Right.
They function according to rules of like some imaginary guy who doesn't really exist. Just like when they try to tell us that Kate Moss is like a female beauty standard. You know, and every guy is just kind of rolling their eyes going, whatever, you know, and meanwhile every guy is looking at 1989 pictures of Anna Nicole Smith. So.
Rick, one last thing?
Yes.
I listened to what you had to say about Bush's speech last night.
Yeah.
And by the way, I did listen to it. It was about 20 minutes.
Okay.
I'm a little surprised that you didn't listen to it.
What could he possibly have said that I would have cared about?
Well, I don't know. How do you know if you don't listen? Now,
because he's been saying the same thing.
There's some ironclad logic.
You, okay? But I will say this.
Uh-huh.
If we get a Democratic president in office, we don't vote in a Republican. I'm telling you. There's going to be problems here. Nobody believes it. Nobody thinks it.
No, you're right. Hold on. No, I don't believe it. Now, here's the thing. It's not that
aren't you now?
That's the thing. Here's the thing, Sean. When I say I didn't listen to George Bush, I'm not hustling you off the phone here, but I don't want to keep.
Dick
Dale, we've already bumped, and I want to keep him waiting. I will say this. Here's the thing. It's not that I didn't listen last night because I have a special dislike for George W. Bush, although I do largely based on his inability to speak. But it's just that, like, you know what it is, man? He wasn't going to say there was no calories in that. He wasn't going to reveal who shot JR. There was no new information there. And the reason you know there's no information is because they leak the text of the speech to journalists hours beforehand so that they can be preparing their stories. And here's the thing. If there's a Democrat, there's going to be problems. If there's a problem, there's going to be problems. You know why? Because there's always problems. And I don't mean to sound like a cynic, but in a world run by human beings in which most of our problems emanate from fighting over an invisible man in the sky, you know what? Nothing changes. Nothing gets better. And that's just the way it is.
All right.
So on that happy note, my friend, I got to go.
Okay.
Thank you, Sean. All right. There you go. Well, I'm just saying what's true. All right, ladies and gentlemen, wait, hold on. It's a bird. It's a plane. There we go.
This has never happened to him before.
Well, what are you going to do, man? It's legendary. What are you going to do? Let's welcome to the Rick Emerson Show, legendary surf guitarist Dick Dale. Dick, how you doing, man? Hello.
Jesus. Yeah, can you hear me?
Hey, Dick Dale, are you there, brother?
Yeah, I hear you.
How you doing, man? Hey, sorry about yesterday. We tried to do a thing yesterday, and then there was a phone snafu, and it was all...
I was getting a veggie wrap in Subway, and the book phones rang, and I grabbed the book.
You know, you talk like I play my guitar, like an oncoming locomotive.
Well, thank you, my friend.
I love it.
Tim Ryan, Tim Ryan hooked us up with you, and he actually said you have, I forget how many, but it was something like five different cell phone numbers, or, I mean, it was.
Timmy talks as almost as fast as you do. You guys must be brothers. I love it.
Tim Ryan works on our sister station.
It's cool. I like what you say, though. What you say is, it's a shame that people don't really see what's really going on, and they get their head in the sand sometimes, and you're saying it like it is. Just for the few moments I heard you.
Well, it's what I do.
My hat off to you.
Before we go any further, let me just say, we talked about this yesterday, and I'll say it today, that you're going to be performing at the Doug Fir Lounge tonight, and you can find out more information there. It is Doug Fir Lounge. .com. We mentioned that we were going to be talking to you yesterday, and I was kind of promoting. I'm like, oh, we're going to be talking to Dick Dale. And I got a bunch of questions emailed into me that I just sort of brought in again today because stuff people wanted to know. And my question, the first one, and you must get asked this a lot, which is that song we just played, Miserloo. Is it true that that is all played on one string on the guitar?
Yes.
Was it like a bet or somebody? Did somebody like bet you couldn't do it, or?
You know what it is I was raised listening to all different styles, and then I heard the Egyptian music, and I heard this, my uncle played on a darbuk, an Arabic drum, and then I heard this oud, and then as a child I heard the song played, but it was played very, very slow for
right.
belly dancers, and it's an Egyptian love song, and what happened was one kid said to me, can you play a song on a single string? And this was one back when I was young and the dinosaurs roamed the earth. And what happened was I said, geez, what can I do? And I started playing Miserloo the way I used to hear it on the oud. And then I said, nah, that's too slow. But Gene Krupa was my big hero, so drums was my first instrument. And I learned to play percussive like Gene Krupa. And I took that same accentuation of style and put it into the strings. And so when I go 1-2-3-4, 1-2-3-4, then you learn to go ticka 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 like that. And that's how I
you are kind of considered the toppermost of the poppermost, as John Lennon used to say, the of surf music. I mean, did you know when you were doing that song and the others that you were kind of creating this brand new thing? I mean, or were you trying to create something new, or did it just sort of happen?
No, it was just me. I've raised lions and tigers for 30 years trying to preserve the breeds before the poachers kill them all off. And I used to listen to my elephants and lions scream when they wanted to eat, and they welcomed me. And I was copying the sounds on my guitar by the roars of my lions and the screams of my mountain lions. And then, of course, I started surfing. I was surfing off, surfing my brains out from sunup to sundown. And then I've been on the islands for years. And so the ocean, Mother Ocean, but the first 17 guys that came to see me when we did our first permits to have teenage dancing back in the 50s, they would just look at me and go, man, yeah, well, you're the king, man. So they came up with the title King of the Surf Guitar. But I actually created the first power amplifiers and output transformers and the first big speakers. So that's why a guitar player calls me king, father of heavy metal.
I got a lot of guitar players who emailed and they had all these technical questions that I wouldn't even know how to ask, but they were like, how does it, because the thing about, and not just you, but surf music in general, even there's a lot of modern bands like Deadbolt and a lot of bands that sort of play stuff that obviously is very modeled on what you do, but it's like guys are like, how does he get that guitar tone? And I was, man, I wouldn't even know, and B, I'm not even sure you'd want to give it away, because that's like a guitar player's secret,
no,
right?
I teach a lot of the young kids and everything. It's called playing with the Dick Output Transformers and the big 15-inch speakers, the Showman amps that we created, and playing on 60-gauge strings, you know. And, guys playing 6, 7, 8, 9, 10-gauge strings. Well, my smallest gauge is 16, 18, 20s, they're 39s, 49s, and 60s. Now I'm cheating. Because I've been kind of cheating, so I dropped down about 58 gauge things, and they call them telephone wires.
That's a huge thing.
It's just a power, it's just a power that I play. It's a percussive sound. I was playing with The Cure one time, and the guitar player said, wow, man, that's the first time I ever heard speed where I heard every note. Well, what he was really hearing was pulsation.
Well, because it's a real, it's a real rhythmic kind of music. And it's I gotta ask this. When you, Did you know, did Quentin Tarantino come to you about using that song, or did he come to some people who represent you? How did that come together?
No, it was half, we were in concert, man, and he came up to my bass player, and he gave him a note, and he goes, "My name's Quentin Tarantino, I want to talk with Dick Dale." My bass player didn't know who he was, so he threw the note away. And so then Quentin, he tracked me down to my dressing room, and then he says, "Man, I've been listening to your music, you know, man, it's just your song, Mizzle, it's a masterpiece, it's like the good, bad, and the ugly." And he goes, "When you do your trumpet," he says, "the man, it's like, it's very heraldic, like Ben Hur." Now, here's the story. Most people make a movie first, and then they put the music to it by watching the rushes. But Tarantino does it backwards. He gets a song and he plays it over and over and over and over, and he gets this energy and he creates pictures in his mind from the song. So he said to me, he said, "Can I have your permission to use Mizzaloo and play it over and over again? Because I want to create a masterpiece of a movie to complement the masterpiece of your song."
That's fantastic. That's so cool.
And what was really weird was, after that, I was coming back from Amsterdam, and we were the only American group brought over to play in front of the Royal Palace with a big classical orchestra. And he goes over and stays in the same place I would stand. And then after he got through, you know, spinning the thing, he locked himself up in a closet. And then he calls me up and goes, "Going down to Universal Studios tonight. Tonight's your night. Tell me what you think." And, man, it just blew me right in the face. Well, it's the same thing. You look at Black Eyed Peas. I just got the award for a triple multi-million sales on them, writing words. The Pump It. That's me playing Mizzaloo.
Oh, really? And so it's they've kind of sampled the song, or they've kind of used it?
No, what we did was worked about 6 months, get that whole thing together, and they wrote words to me actually playing the song as it was recorded for.
I think you just turned 69. Are you one of those guys you're just going to play forever, just going to play until the very, very end?
I'm like you. My brain never looks 20, but my body's... ain't buying it. But the point lies is, always remember, tell the people out there that a youthful mind does not recognize age. I just got through doing 38 concerts in 42 days.
Well, I gotta tell you, and as dumb as it sounds, it sounds like such a cliche, but you do that kind of stuff, man, it keeps you young inside, I'm convinced of that.
Well, it's the babes.
ladies and gentlemen, if you'd like to see Dick Dale, he's gonna be at the Doug Fir Lounge tonight, and you got a website?
Yeah, it's dickdale.com. I answer all my email. I get about 500 a day, but I answer them all because it becomes too personal.
Well, dickdale.com, and if you want to find out more, you can also go to dougfirlounge.com. Have a good show tonight, my friend. It was an honor to speak with you.
Hey, thanks for your support. And Sundays is coming out with the original Surfer's Choice with all the outtakes and intakes and all that stuff. It's going to be a big, massive thing on the...
Fantastic. DickDale.com. Thank you. There you go, my friend. Dick Dale is going to be at the Doug Fir Lounge tonight. There you go. Thanks, Matt. All right, it's 503-733-2970. We want to thank Tim Ryan at KUPO, by the way, who kind of hooked us up with that. There you go. All right. How cool is that? All right, ladies and gentlemen, we'll take a break here. We'll come back. We got Tim Riley coming up at the AM 970 Noon News Hour. Later on, we got CNN radio correspondent Jim Roop, Gary Baumgarten, The Week in Geek. We'll talk about that superhero stuff spot as well. Talk about Rockstar Supernova. I'll kind of go through the rest of my notes from that taping on Sunday, and et cetera, et cetera. Don't go anywhere. Sir Rick Emerson Show on AM 970, Solid State Radio.